throw balls far. You want good words? Data language.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Kalk with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP!
All right, welcome to The Skinny on Sports here on a Monday. If you're wondering why I'm running around in here in the studio without having hit that record button, because I remembered right here at the beginning of the show, Jared's out today. Hopefully he'll be back tomorrow. So it's just me flying solo here on a Monday morning. There's all kinds of things from the weekend. NFL from yesterday. I got got something to play. Pat Mahomes. Andy Reid. An unbelievable play negated by a penalty. And oh, there they are. Hey, Pat. Andy. How you guys doing? Yeah. Good Monday to you, too. Unbelievable. And I mean, listen, it doesn't get called very often, but it was an obvious offside on Kadarius Toney, who just continues to ruin fourth quarter game-winning plays for the Chiefs. And it was an unbelievable play by Travis Kelce to have the presence of mind to lateral that back. But it was an obvious penalty. He was lined up in front of the ball, for heaven's sakes. So we can hit that. Cowboys just demolished the Eagles. I saw Emmanuel Acho compare the Eagles to a team from a couple of years ago in the NFL, and I thought it was a very interesting comparison. See maybe how their season is going to end. Also, the in-season tournament, the NBA finished up. LeBron, I don't get it. Him and Tom Brady, they must have went to the same fountain of youth. He was awesome, the MVP. The Lakers beat the Pacers. Also, the Thunder Warriors. If there are basketball gods out there, they will give us a seven-game series between those two teams. Just been unbelievable action between the Thunder and the Warriors. And again, on Friday night in Oklahoma City, it was just an incredible game between those two teams. There was tons of high school hoops over the weekend that we can talk about. I mean, a boatload of games. Let's see. Of the nine schools, we had 17 teams compete. The Merritt Oilerettes did not compete because they're going down to the Bertha Frank Teague Classic in Ada over the Christmas break. So they were the only ones that didn't play. Elk City played four games apiece, so that's eight. And then 15 times three is 45. So 53 games were available this week, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday on the Paragon Network. And there was some good basketball. We'll talk about all the results, give you an idea, break down all the tournaments that happened, what happened where. And then I'm going to go back to Friday. I was on for a little bit on Friday, then I had to get off the show with Scott and Jared to be able to set up and do that first basketball game for the Big Elks Friday morning. And once you got inside there, the reception wasn't very good. I stepped in and I couldn't hear them, and I just kind of cut bait. That way we weren't just, you know, it had been a lot easier to listen to without me. But that's not what I really want to talk about. I had an amazing adventure on the way back from Childress, Texas. It's a crazy story. And so I'll just tell it right off the top. 225-9698 is the phone or the text line. That is 225-9698. Give us a call. Shoot us a text. We'll be here to read them. Whatever you have on your mind about anything in sports, feel free to chime right in at 225-9698. If you're going to be outside the listening area, a couple ways to stay in touch with the show. You can log on to KADSAM.com or you can download the app. The app's got it all. It's got radio. It's got the Penny News, Big Elk and Paragon TV, all of it right there at your fingertips. And, of course, the Skinny on Sports podcast, which we will have one for today, that even though I remembered a couple minutes late. You can go back and find any show that we have anywhere that you find podcasts. Skinny on Sports podcast will be there. Okay, so Friday. The Elks played at 10:30. There was a chance that if they won the game against Vernon, they would play again that afternoon, and then The Elkettes played right after. So the Big Elks were beaten by Vernon. 54-39. The Elkettes lost a five-point game to Spearman, which that'll be later. So get in the car. Get in the FJ. If you haven't seen our the Cool Mobile is what maybe some people call it. It's an FJ Cruiser, but it's got these giant jacked up tires that make it even cooler, right? And that's just because the Elk City Sports been on Cool 94, kind of, you know, branding wise. Hey, let's take that one, take that vehicle. Can't do it in football just because we have so much equipment that the Hummer is a necessity. But for me in basketball, the equipment's pared down quite a bit. I just have one box of equipment, so it'll all fit in there, and we can get that going. So go down, get done with the games. I'm headed back, and I think to myself, I hadn't eaten yet. And it's about, oh gosh, I don't know, 1:15 maybe when I leave Childress. And I decide, it was almost like our man Billy Goodwin was in my ear, and he said, Altus, pick up taco. I went, okay. And I had plenty of time to spare. I had to get back here, planning on doing the evening sports report. I'm thinking, you know, it's 1:15. It takes a little bit longer to go through Altus, but pick up tacos fast, and I'll be back, 3:30. That gives me plenty of time to write the sports, check out the scores from whatever happened Thursday and Friday in some of the high school basketball tournaments. It was basically what was happening on the sporting calendar as far as results that could be reported on or whatnot. So I head to Altus. I go turn off there just in between Wellington and Childress, head east, Highway 62, go through Hollis, go through the home of Coach Ellison at Gould, go through Duke. And I'm thinking, all right, I'm getting there. I've just got like 15 miles, and I'll be ready to eat some pickup taco. Get a couple of miles outside of Duke, and I kind of feel a little kind of shake, and I think, uh-oh, what was that? And then it starts getting pretty bumpy. And those big tires on the FJ, they're the big old knobby tires, and I'm thinking, oh, no. I've got a major problem. About that time, the semi in front of me kind of sees it too and blinks its lights back toward me as I'm starting to pull off to the side of the road. I pull off, I get out, go around, and sure enough, the back right tire is just completely almost shredded off. It's still on there, but it's got a hole. I mean, it's clearly an issue that cannot be solved with that tire. I think, okay, where is all the stuff in the FJ? Well, the spare tire is hooked to the back, so I know where it's at. Call Gabe and said, I kind of asked him if he'd ever, and the spare tire had never been taken off of there. It was more than obvious once I got it off, once put it on. So anyway, find all the tools, find the jack. Then I'm kind of in the process of, okay, I need something flat because the shoulder was pretty wide. But since the flat tire was on the right-hand side, which was, since I was going east, it was away from the road, I needed like a board or something to try to level the jack and not have it go down, into the, it was kind of a gravel, sandy, what have you, so it would actually work. Well, about that time, a gentleman from the ODOT, had seen me on the side of the road. He had pulled over, and he's like, can I help you? I was like, yeah, sure. I'm looking for a board or something. And he said, I've got a couple. Hang on. So he gets those out. And I've got it. By this time, I've got all the tools, and I'm getting the spare off the back. And so the thought starts to, we both kind of look, and there's these hubcap covers on the aftermarket tires on the FJ. And we both begin to realize as we look through the tools that the entire set of tools are made for the market tire, which is the spare that we have, but nothing that's in the toolkit is going to even remotely help us remove the messed up tire. Thankfully, a gentleman, a rancher, farmer, sees this issue as well. He comes over to offer his assistance, sees the issue that we have. I've looked completely through the FJ. There's no, just an Allen wrench is all that was needed to free the hubcap cover, but there was none to be found in any of the tools that we had. So thankfully, he had a whole set of those. Whip it out of there, get it, get that hubcap cover off. He's like, let me see that the tire iron. Hand it to him, and we quickly realize, once again, this isn't going to work. Because it's not it won't fit onto the lug nuts. Thankfully, once again, he had an impact that had the right size head, whips them off. We get the tire changed, and then at that point, we also realize, uh-oh, the lug nuts that fit the spare tire don't necessarily fit the aftermarket tire. And so he gets them kind of secured enough. I limper into Altus thinking, okay, there's a tire shop. We can buy a new tire. All will be good. They don't have anything like that in stock. So long story short, they tighten those lug nuts as well as they can. Air the spare tire up. It was shy about 10 pounds of pressure. And here I start north back to Elk from Altus. And that actually went pretty well. If you would have seen me driving up the highway on Friday afternoon, it would have looked completely odd because you've got three tires, the two on the left and the one on the front right were, oh, I don't know, three times the size of the spare, maybe. Might be an exaggeration, but it was clearly one wasn't like the other. But thankfully, it was in the middle of the afternoon, because if you think about the times that I went to Childress this week or came back from Childress this week, on Thursday, it was early morning. You know, like I was on the road by, what, like 8:30, something like that, 8 o'clock. So there's people traveling. Coming home, though, Thursday night, it was past 9. So if that would have happened coming home in the middle of the night, I might still be there. Or it wouldn't have went this smooth. Then I kept thinking Saturday morning, you know, I left here at 5 or 5:30 a.m. And I kept thinking, man, what if this would have happened? What happened yesterday would have happened right now. How in the world? What would I do? There'd be nothing I could do. So all in all, it was an adventurous Friday afternoon. And the only thing that I can only blame one thing. My stomach. But in a weird way, I'm thankful that my stomach was so set on pickup taco in Altus that I ended up on that highway in that spot at that time for the good Lord to provide two angels to help me out of a situation that was without their help. It wouldn't have mattered. I could have been on the pit crew boss for Dale Earnhardt, and it wouldn't have mattered, because without their assistance and without the tools that they had to remedy the situation that I was faced with, it would have never been possible. So I thank those two gentlemen so much for happening to be there and being able to help me out of a real pickle when that tire decided it was not going to work anymore on the FJ on Friday afternoon. So thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. It was pretty good timing, I'll say that. So that was my Friday. How was everybody else's Friday? I'm sure everybody else just kind of watched basketball. A bunch of good basketball happened throughout the week, the latter part of the week. Reliving the Friday experience I had. Go back and listen to the podcast if you missed the show. It was a wild couple of hours there, leaving Childress, trying to head back to Elk City from the Childress Holiday Invitational. Man, what a tournament they put on down there! It's a pretty cool setup at Childress. They've got their main gym, which would be like, you know, the game gym or what have you. And then right, I mean, attached to it is the what they call the JV gym. They actually said they call it the back gym, kind of a practice gym. But it's a nice, it's a game playable for sure, obviously, since there was games there. The seating was way, 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 way more limited. I think there was like a row. Like if you've ever been to the elementary gyms here in Elk City, it's very, very similar to that. Probably more space away, like around the court. But as far as the way the seating is, very similar to the elementary gyms here in Elk with the way the amount of seats, and they go all the way on one side, nothing on the other. It's a very, very similar thing there at that JV gym in Childress. Play-wise, man, the Elkettes, the first 2 days, they played two games on Thursday. Right out of the box, they came back from 14 down at half. And thought they might have won the game against Clarendon, Texas, down two, just a couple of seconds left. The ball kicked out left wing to Lucy O'Hara. She knocks down a shot. They rule her toe on the line. I think it was the right from the angle we had. It looked like she probably did have a toe. But I was thinking about this driving home on Saturday with the way the week went. So they lose 51-48 in overtime as that shot sent into overtime instead of a one-point lead. It was overtime. They end up losing that one 51-48. Come back Thursday night, play the host school, the Childress Lady Bobcats. The Elkettes controlled that game throughout most. I mean, when you go back and look, the first half, Elk City dominated the first half until about a minute and a half left. And they went from up 10 to up 1 at half. One of the Childress girls, Jocelyn Roark, got loose, knocked down three threes in like a minute and a half to her own personal 9-0 run that made it a one-point game at halftime. The Elkettes, though, then in the second half and third into the third quarter-ish, stretched that lead back out to 12. It was 39-27 at one point. Largest lead of the game there was 12 for either side. And it looked like, okay, 1-1 on the first day, and then all of a sudden Roark again hit three threes in the fourth quarter, and Childress came back and won 50-48. Then on Friday morning, or early afternoon, I guess, against Spearman, hard-fought game, defensive game. The Spearman ends up winning 38-33. And then Saturday, I guess, almost a carbon copy to me of what we saw in the Weatherford game in game one. West Plains came out, pressed the Elkettes, forced turnovers, got a big lead in the first half, and then played essentially even in the second half. But it's way too far behind to come back and win. They lose that one 55-37. And I got to thinking on the way back Saturday on the Elkettes side of things, like, man, how much does this change if Lucy O'Hara's foot was like, let's say a size 6 instead of a size 8 or what, you know, whatever it is. But I mean, that is how close. I mean, it was just like the edge of her toe is on the line to make it a 2 and not a 3. But for a young team that when you look up there, it's, you know, two freshmen, two juniors, and a senior, excuse me, in the starting lineup. Then coming off the bench, you've got sophomores and some juniors. It's a young, young, young team. As a point, freshmen, even more freshmen coming off the bench. A young, young team. And how much difference could the week have – how much difference would it have made for the week confidence-wise? It was so close. It's just one of those things. She caught it, shot it, made it. But if that's a 3 instead of a 2, if her foot is just a tick back behind the line instead of on the line, and you win that first game, and then you get that confidence of coming back from a double-digit halftime deficit to beat a good team, and, you know, do you hold on against Childress? Now all of a sudden you're 2-0 playing Spearman on Friday. It didn't happen, and the Elkettes are going to have to grow from it. They lose all four games, the first three by a combined 10 points. Then, you know, it looked like they kind of ran out of gas on Saturday against West Plains, which to me was the best team they played there. And so, no surprise, I guess, in a lot of ways. But it just – the first three chances to win every one of those games, and then, of course, Saturday happened. So the Elkettes 0-4, 1-5 total on the season with a couple of games coming up this week at the end of the week, Friday and Saturday, at home against Tuttle, and then going to Woodward to round out the pre-Christmas break portion of the schedule. Then on the other side, on the Big Elks, they start out on Thursday against Groover, Texas, play their best half of the season to that point. There's no doubt about it. Came in 0-2 with losses to Weatherford and Clinton. Led Groover by 14 at halftime, and then it looked like the Greyhounds did a little bit of a change defensively. Instead of kind of maybe three-quarter court pressing, they dropped back into a half court, but really pressured. The Elkettes, or the Big Elks, excuse me, offense really kind of went south there in the third quarter. Groover ends up winning 61-52. Very similar game against Vernon on Friday morning, where it's back and forth. You know, it's like 3 seconds changed everything. Damon Jackson hit a three at the top of the key to make it 28-26 Vernon with, I don't know, 15 seconds left in the half. Vernon comes down. The Elks, I think it was a turnover, or may have even been a charge. They may have taken a charge on a drive down the lane. And so it's 28-26, 3 seconds to go. And, you know, you hit a three, you get a stop, everything seems like it's kind of ended the half in the positive from the Brown and White. And then on the inbound play, the ball is stolen and a three-pointer's knocked in for Vernon at the buzzer. And all of a sudden, it's like all that hard work throughout the first 17 minutes, or I guess it wouldn't be 17. It would be 15 minutes and 57 seconds is just gone. It's just like the balloon popped and Vernon wins 54-39. Now, to the Elks' credit, they got up 8 o'clock on Saturday morning. Beat Valley at 47-35, and then on Saturday afternoon, the teams are playing exactly the same time, and the Elks come back from 7 down going into the fourth quarter to beat Seymour, Texas, 43-39, only allowed 3 points. No, 2 points, 3 points. Yeah, it was 36-29 going into the fourth. So the Elks only allow 3 points in the fourth quarter, and they overcome a 7-point. Fourth quarter deficit to win 43-39. So the Elks split four, go 2-2 out in Childers, 2-4 on the season. And, you know, the first half of every game they played was fantastic. The third quarter's left a little to be desired against Groover and Vernon. They got over that hump against Valley, maybe a little bit of a problem of Seymour, but the fourth quarter against Seymour was fantastic. Let's see, they would have outscored them 14-3 and turned a 7-point deficit into a 4-point win. So the Big Elks feeling pretty good about themselves coming out of the Holiday Classic in Childress with a couple of wins on Saturday. All right, let's look at the small schools from around the area. We'll start with the singular locations. All right, so the Eric teams went down to the Best of the Southwest in Granite, and they had really nice showings. The Eric girls end up winning the third place game over Blair, 52-17. So the Lady Bearcats are third place winners at the Best of the Southwest. They beat Granite, lost to Lakeba Sickles to get into that third place game against Blair. And then the Bearcats are the Best of the Southwest champs as they run through Indiahoma, 57-31, Navajo, 54-43, and Granite, 47-42 in the finals. Granite was ranked number 8 in the first Class B rankings on the boys' side. So a really nice tournament victory for the Eric Bearcats this week down at Granite at the Best of the Southwest Classic. Now, down in Geronimo, the Hollis teams just kind of getting the season started. They're a little bit like Elk City and Merritt as far as not playing very many games so far this year due to football. But the both teams played in the Consolation Championship, and both teams lost the Consolation Championship. On Thursday, the girls lost to Apache 33-56. The boys lost to Frederick 54-29. Then they both turned around and won on Friday. Girls beat Frederick 53-34, Snyder 51-40. And then in those Consolation Championships, didn't go their way. Sterling beat the Hollis girls 56-36. Hydro Eakley beat the Hollis boys 59-32. So that's the Geronimo tournament where Hollis went. A couple of teams were up in Moreland. It was the Merritt Oilers. As I mentioned, the Oilerettes didn't play. So the Oilers go to the Moreland tournament. They beat the host team, Moreland, 50-39 on Thursday. They lost to Canute on Friday in the semifinals, 51-34. And then in the third-place game, they fell to Turpin, 54-20. So Merritt Oilers are the fourth-place team in the Moreland Holiday Classic. The two Canute teams both made it to the finals. The Trojanettes, 64-12, round one over Enid's JV. They beat the host Moreland, 45-34. And then in the finals, the Canute Trojanettes are the Moreland Holiday Classic champions. They defeated Wacomas 48-37. Let's see how much that impresses the voters from around the state as the Canute Trojanettes. Let's see where they end up as the second round of rankings will come out today, this afternoon sometime, with everybody playing tournaments. Kind of a measuring stick week all across the state of Oklahoma. Canute was number 8 in the first set of rankings with one first place vote, so we'll see what that gets them, if that improves their ranking coming out today. The Canute Trojans also played in the finals. They beat Sarah in round 1, 88-39. They beat Merritt in the semis, 51-34. But they fell to Texoma, 63-56. So the Canute Trojans are the runners-up in the Moreland Holiday Classic. Texoma, number 9 in Class A. They're undefeated now. Canute, 9-2. See if anything they did impresses the voters from around the coaches, the voters from around the state enough to move them up or down. We'll see what happens to Canute as far as the rankings might occur coming out today. Then everybody else was up at Leedy, the inaugural South Canadian Classic. Man, what a tournament this was. The field that it gathered was just an awesome field. When on the boys' side, you've got Okarchi at number 4, Red Oak at number 17. In Class A, Leedy was number 10 in Class B. Am I missing anybody else? I don't think so. I think that's the ranked teams on the boys' side. Girls' side, Okarchi was number 5 in A. Red Oak was number 4 in Class A. Cheyenne Raiden, which is a team that might end up being ranked here pretty quick, was there as well. And then Hammond, the defending Class B champs, at number 2. Leedy at number 9. So a heck of a field for the first South Canadian Classic. Cheyenne Raiden, I mentioned, was there. All Western Oklahoma, all three championship games. You know, you have the consolation bracket championship, you got the third place game, and you got the championship game. All three stayed home in Western Oklahoma, which was pretty awesome, to say the least. So the Cheyenne Raiden, we had talked to Lake Carpenter on Wednesday. He was nervous for the Leedy Lady Bison about this game, and for good reason. Cheyenne led throughout, but ended up falling 49-44 in round one. They turn around and beat Visai 57-20, and then they beat Arapaho Butler in the consolation championship 59-47. So the Cheyenne Raiden Lady Bears won the consolation championship in the South Canadian Classic. The Cheyenne Raiden Bears lost the first. I couldn't find a score from Saturday. 53-41 and 38-35 to Hammond and Arapaho Butler. Arapaho Butler played in both consolation championship games, the girls and the boys. The girls lost to Red Oak for the first game 55-40, beat Balco 52-48, and then lost to Cheyenne, as I mentioned, to get sixth. The Indians, a tough one to Okarchi, who's the top five team in Class A in round one, 66-61. They beat Cheyenne by 3, and then they lost to Balco 55-42. The two Leedy teams both took home hardware. Leedy Lady Bison were the third place winners. They beat Cheyenne 49-44, lost to Hammond 40-37 in the semis, and then beat Okarchi 62-47. So the Leedy Lady Bison are third, and the Leedy Bison are the champs of the inaugural South Canadian Classic. Some good wins. They beat Visai 61-57. That's always a battle in Dewey County. And then beat Red Oak 67-50 and beat Okarchi 62-55. Those last two wins specifically against teams number 4 and number 17 in Class A. Red Oak 17, Okarchi 4 in Class A. So really good job, really good tournament, quality wins from Coach Carpenter's Leedy Bison to take home the title. That leaves the Hammond Lady Warriors and Warriors. The Hammond Lady Warriors are the champs of the South Canadian Classic, an unbelievable final. They came back to defeat Red Oak 53-52. Edwina Piwo knocked down a right wing three, down two with like a second left. Edwina Piwo makes the three, and Hammond wins 53-52 over Red Oak as the South Canadian Classic champs. The boys lost the third place games. They beat Cheyenne the first game 53-41. Lost to Okarchee 74-39, and then lost to Red Oak 63-35. So the Hammond Warriors made the third place game, were unable to get the win. But man, what a really good week when you look around the Paragon Network. Three tournament championships with the Canute Trojanettes, the Eric Bearcats, and of course the Hammond Lady Warriors. Third place wins as well by the Eric Girls, the Leedy Girls. And so a fantastic showing by a lot of the teams here. It's still kind of hard to believe that we're not talking five county results this week, this Monday, but we're not. It's a thing of the past. Kudos to all these teams finding places to go. Kudos to Leedy and putting together that South Canadian Classic, getting some five county flair for sure with Cheyenne, Leedy, and Hammond. Eric at times, I was really more Sweetwater, but anyway, getting that five county feeling within some other teams, some area teams, some out of the area, Okarchee and Red Oak, but solid, if not fantastic, basketball teams for a first year tournament. The field that they were able to gather was awesome, and so kudos to them for putting that together. Kudos to all the schools. You know, there's varying results, but it's also early. You know, this is kind of the we're getting to the end of the first stage of the season this week. We'll finish up the pre-Christmas break portion. There's always kind of three sections of the season to me. It's the before Christmas, January, and then the playoffs. Because once we get into January, first week back, a lot of teams will play Tuesday. Then everybody will play Thursday, Friday, Saturday in some sort of tournament. You'll have a couple of games the next week. Then you might have, you know, four more the week after that. And the third week in January, always another tournament week in the state of Oklahoma. So, man, you look up at the end of January as, you know, the playoffs are the sites are being announced and teams are kind of rounding into that late season form. And, you know, you play 10 or so games before Christmas. You play 10 or 12 games in January, at least a lot of times. And then kind of gear down the regular season to gear up to get going in the playoffs. And so it's crazy how fast things fly. It seemed like we just started football last week, and now all of a sudden here we go we're done with the first third of the basketball season at the end of the week for most schools around Western Oklahoma. But once again, you know, it doesn't matter how it starts. It's, you know, there's years, this year was one of them where you kind of look around going, Where are the state tournament quality teams? Where are those teams that are going to make the runs? And by the time, you know, Christmas gets here, you start to see, well, that team's better than I thought, or that team's really coming along. And I'm sure by the time we get to the playoffs drawn up and the brackets drawn up, you'll start to see more teams from this area emerge as, that one's scary. Nobody wants to see them. You know, then with the favorites as well. So a good week in high school hoops all across Western Oklahoma. All right, when we come back, it's kind of a hodgepodge of things. We had on the text line, another crier was outed, and this is 100% correct. Mark from Duke has a crier that he wants to expose. We'll do that, talk all kinds of things next. Hanging out here on a Monday, wrapping up the Monday show. The final segment, kind of a hodgepodge of everything else that happened around sports over the weekend. Another crier. I talked about Andy Reid and Pat Mahomes and the crying they did at the end of the game. And listen, it stinks because the play that Travis Kelce made down 20-17, you know, catch it, run. See, you're about to be tackled. See Kadarius Toney behind you out of the corner of his eye and throw a perfect pass to Toney that he actually caught and didn't drop and run into the end zone for what looks like a go-ahead touchdown. to just be wiped away by an offensive offsides. Listen, I get it. It's not a play. It's not a call you see very often. There's no doubt about that. But it also doesn't mean it wasn't the right call. He was in front of the football. You know, and of course, I'm sure we'll get the Kansas City loving media or the Kansas City loving fans on social medias will say, oh, Tony asked the ref if he was fine and the ref gave him the thumbs up. No, he didn't. He was a full yard in front of the, I mean, he was a full foot in front of the ball. His foot was in front of the football before it was snapped. It was obviously offsides, and all the crying that Mahomes and Andy Reid did, we gave him a little bit of this earlier in the show. That's what they sounded like at the press conference. Now, Mark from Duke also pointed out another guy that sounded exactly like this. Under 16 timeout, BOK Center in Tulsa. And here is what we heard from 5'2" Eric Musselman. Arkansas Razorbacks, pig silly. And that's, it was almost drowned out. Pig silly. Razorbacks. You couldn't even hear the fans. You couldn't even hear the fans doing, calling the Hogs because of Musselman was crying too loud. Pig silly. Second time Musselman's been kicked out of the game in the 3 years at the BOK, and oh, just happens to be the two times that the Sooners rolled his Razorbacks from one of the most loyal and logical Chiefs fans. We have to acknowledge the high level of undiscipline on this team and admit that Tony has lost his two games alone on final drives. That I think I saw that the Chiefs have had turnovers or drops or penalties on what would be four game-winning drives. Or your game-winning plays behind. And you know, this has been coming, though. And part of it's been the greatness of Patrick Mahomes has masked a lot of this stuff. But it's been coming. When you pay one guy that much percent of the salary cap, these things are going to pop up. And, you know, Tony was a bargain bin guy, got him off the scrap heap, and he made plays in the Super Bowl to help the Chiefs win against the Eagles last year. But this year, he's been a disaster. And he's absolutely been a reason for Chiefs losses, and yesterday was another. Now, there's no guarantee that the Chief defense is stopping Josh Allen to go down, at least tie it or whatever, but, man, it is – it's really disappointing to see such an unbelievable play get wiped away by such an ignorant play. And that is lining up offsides on the offense, clear past the football. Other NFL stuff. All right, I can't take full credit for this. I was, you know, the Cowboys took care of the Eagles. There's no other way to say it. They whipped up on the Eagles last night. Splitting the season series. Now the division, both teams 9-3. And right now the Cowboys would be the second seed in the NFC. If the playoffs started today, the Cowboys would be your NFC East champs. Actually, I'm sorry, they're both 10-3. Be your NFC East champs, they'd be the second seed. The 49ers would be the one seed. When you look at the three 10-3 teams in the NFC, there's one thing that separates them immensely, and that is if you look at the point differential. One of these things is not like the other two. Dallas 10-3, their point differential is a plus 188, which is the best in the league. San Francisco 10-3, their point differential is a plus 175, which is the second best point differential in the league. The only teams over 100 are those two. Baltimore is a plus 143, so that's a full, 45 points behind Dallas. and 28. No, more than that. 32 behind San Francisco. And then the Dolphins are 118 and the Bills are 104 on the plus side. The Eagles at 10-3 are just a plus 21. Let me give you an idea of some teams that have a better plus minus than the 10-3 Philadelphia Eagles. The Jags, 8-5, plus 22. The Chiefs, 8-5, plus 64. The Lions, 9-4, plus 26. The Vikings, 7-6, plus 24. The Saints are 6-7 and plus 24. While the Eagles, 10-3 and only a plus 21. And I got to give credit to Emmanuel Acho. He compared this Eagles team to another Pennsylvania team from just a couple years back. Do you remember the 2020 NFL season? It was the crazy season of COVID where we saw regular season games be moved to Mondays, to Tuesdays. I don't remember if there was a Wednesday game, but there might have been. And in that COVID season, one team blazed out of the gates, and it was the Pittsburgh Steelers. Pittsburgh Steelers, 11-0, cruising to the one seed in the AFC, cruising to home field advantage, all that. Do you remember what happened to that Pittsburgh Steelers team? And now listen, you can say it was because of COVID, but I'm just making the comparison to this Eagles team. The Eagles were 10-1. They've now lost two in a row, have a chance to lose a third in a row at Seattle this week. Pittsburgh was 11-0. They end up losing three straight. And what happened to them? What was the main thing that compares both of these teams? Pittsburgh was winning those games, but Ben was turning it over. And they would wiggle out and win. A lot similar to what's happened to the Eagles so far. Yeah, they're winning the games, but Jalen Hurts is putting them in really tough positions a lot of times with turnovers. But they've been able to find these ways to win these games at the end and get all the credit in the world for being able to do it. But it also masks some issues that they've clearly had throughout the season. One is defense. Their defense is terrible. Last in the league in red zone defense, allowing almost 80% touchdown rate in the red zone for opposing offenses. Hurts isn't healthy. I don't care what he says. He doesn't look – there's something that's a little bit off about him. Are the Eagles headed to the same fate that we saw the Steelers in 2020? Now, the good thing for Philadelphia is they ran through this gauntlet. You go back to the first Cowboys game that they were able to weasel out and win that one. They should not have won that game either, but they did, 28-23. They were dominated by the Chiefs most of the game. They pulled that one out of the fire. They win 21-17. Then they pull the Bills game out that they probably shouldn't have won either. So the last five, and then, of course, they played the Niners and Cowboys again. So the last five, they've gone Cowboys, Chiefs, Bills, Niners, Cowboys. And now if you want to put the sixth coming up next next Monday night at Seattle, that would be six straight games. It's definitely the toughest part of their schedule. There's no doubt about it. And the good news for them is after next Monday at Seattle, they finish home Giants, home Cardinals at Giants. So if they can win the game on Monday night against Seattle, that forces Dallas to win out. The Cowboys are kind of going through their gauntlet of the schedule right now with this game. You know, they started with the Seahawks last Thursday. Now they won the game last night against the Eagles, but they still have the next three on their schedule: at Bills, at Dolphins, host Lions. And then that last game is always kind of a trip-up type game at the Commanders just because it's a division game and it's because it's Washington. It's a game that seems like the Cowboys could lose. But what I'm saying is the Cowboys still have to – if the Eagles can beat Seattle next Monday, that forces Dallas to win the next four, and they've already won five straight. Nine-game winning streaks in the NFL don't happen very often. And that's what it would be – that's what it would force Dallas to do in order to win that division the way they have the lead right now. That's not very likely. So even with all this said about the Eagles and their struggles, if they can turn it around and beat Seattle, they're still probably going to win the NFC East, probably going to be the 2 seed, and maybe even the 1 seed if the 49ers stumble at one point down the stretch. But at least for right now, those arrows are pointed in completely different directions for those two NFC East teams. And, okay, I people laughed at me. I mean, I even texted Jim the other day, what if this happens? But it's time to seriously consider Dak Prescott for the NFL MVP. The guy has been phenomenal. And the one thing lacking on his MVP resume was winning games against good teams. Well, that's happened 2 weeks in a row. And I know Seattle got beat again by San Francisco, so maybe they're falling out of the good team list. But there's still these next chances at Bills, at Dolphins, against the Lions. If Dallas can now win two, they've already beat the Eagles, not even beat the Eagles. They pummeled Philadelphia last night. Let's be honest. Dallas looked like way the superior team against Philly last night. It wasn't really even as close as it turned out. But the truth is, if Dallas can win two out of the next three, when you look at the stats that Dak Prescott is throwing up and winning, let's say, three out of four quote-unquote big games down the stretch, he's going to be a serious, serious contender, no worse than second in the MVP voting. No worse than second if Dallas is able to win two out of these next three. If he wins all three and they win the division, you can write it in ink that Dak Prescott will be the MVP. Last night went a long way toward doing that. I mentioned the Kansas City, this debacle there at the end of the game. You know, other things around the NFL. Man, the Rams had a real opportunity to be able to put themselves in a spot to capture one of the wild card out of the NFC. And then former Oklahoma State Cowboy Tylan Wallace takes the punt back in overtime for the Ravens. 75 yards for the walk-off punt return touchdown. That's now happened twice this season. Wallace did it yesterday, and the Jets in the opening Monday night game, remember all the way back to that, when the Jets got a punt return to win the game in overtime against the Bills. It's just something you don't see, and it's happened twice. So kudos to Tylan Wallace, former Poke, with that 76-yard punt return in overtime, walk-off punt return touchdown for the Ravens to knock off the Rams. A huge loss for the LA Rams there, as they played really, really, really well in that game against what a lot of people consider the best team in the AFC at Baltimore in the rain. It was a sloppy field, a terrible day, and the Rams had every chance to win that game and put themselves at 7-6 and right in the thick of the NFC wildcard chase. And instead, they allow that punt return, and then they're kind of behind the eight ball now. And so, you look at the NFC, Dallas or Philly, whoever doesn't win the East is going to be a wild card team. And then after that, Detroit's 9-4. The next wild card team, a possible wild card, actually the Rams would have been ahead. It's Philly 7-6. Green Bay can get there tonight. Everybody else has got a losing record. The NFC South, three teams tied at the top at 6-7, exactly the way it was a year ago when the Tom Brady-led Tampa Bay Bucks won that division, hosted Dallas, and just had no chance. It's probably the same fate we're going to see this year from the NFC South champ. Whoever comes away with that division win is going to have to face either the Eagles or the Cowboys. Now it'll be a home game. But has anybody got a bunch of faith in Baker or Desmond Ridder? I'm sure if you're the Eagles or the Cowboys, the last team you want to win the NFC South is probably the Saints, just because Derek Carr is a way more established quarterback, even though he's been pretty mid his entire career. But the atmosphere that can be created down there in New Orleans in the Dome with a guy that's played in the playoffs before, if you had your choice, he would be the last choice, I'm sure, for Dallas or Philly, whoever has to be the wild card, to go play in the Superdome as opposed to getting Desmond Ridder or Baker Mayfield for Atlanta or Tampa. I think that's a pretty easy choice if you're the Cowboys or if you're the Philadelphia Eagles as far as the opponent in the first round for the team that doesn't win the East. Dylan Gabriel headed to Oregon. I think we saw that coming, right? Once Gabriel got himself in the portal, Oregon just simply checks all the boxes. Oregon checked money box. Oregon checked play for a chance to play for championship box. And I think Oregon checked familiarity offensively box, as far as I think the way that they run offense plays to the strengths of what Dylan Gabriel's game is. Also, probably a little bit of a cherry on the top for him personally, Oregon opens the season next year at Hawaii, which where he's from. So a home game on the islands for Dylan Gabriel to start against Oregon. I think that made all the sense in the world for him to end up there. And you know, the portal is the portal, right? And a lot of times we think of the transfer portal as negative for teams, negative for players. I mean, there ends up being so many of these guys that when you look up here and when the portal closes, there'll still be tons of names in it that don't have anywhere to go because nobody, you know, the grass isn't always greener. But this is like a portal success story to me because it makes sense for OU in a lot of ways to trade two seasons, what you hope are two seasons, to Jackson Arnold for one of Dylan Gabriel. And it makes sense for Dylan Gabriel to be able to go to a place that's ready-made for a Big Ten title run, a college football playoff run. He gets a spot on a really good team. He gets money because you know Phil Knight is writing him a check. And he also gets to go home and play against Hawaii in game one. So I think this is a portal success story. There are not a ton of those out there all the time, but I think Dylan Gabriel to Oregon is certainly one of those. And then we'll get into this a little bit more in the next couple of days. Did anybody pay attention? Did the in-season tournament do anything for you in the NBA? Did it do anything? Did you even know it was happening? The Lakers beat the Pacers on Saturday, being pretty good. LeBron's the MVP. Yeah, Sam's right. On the text line, LeBron will be taking off a lot of games later in the year. I would agree with that 100%. You know, he used this as a whatever he used it as, trying to support the in-season tournament. He was phenomenal throughout, and it's amazing to see him doing that in season 21. The NBA is not a place for old dudes very often, and damn sure not a place for old dudes to be top five players in the league. LeBron James is just an alien or something. But, man, he was good. He's been good to start the season. Good in those games, especially in that in-season tournament. And the Lakers are the inaugural champs of that. And then, if the basketball gods are listening, give us Thunder Warriors in round one. Let's say Thunder 3rd seed, Warriors 6th seed. Maybe Thunder 2, Warriors win their first play-in game, and whatever it is. Give us Thunder Warriors 7-game series. The games that have been played between these two teams have just been phenomenal. You had the Steph Curry controversial basket with Draymond interference, no, in the first game at Oklahoma City at the buzzer. Then you had the Thunder blowing out. The one game was the blowout in San Francisco. Then you had an overtime win by back-to-back overtime wins by the Thunder. One, Chet Holmgren knocked down a three to send it into overtime in San Francisco. Then the Thunder pulled away and won. Then the other night, Holmgren gets fouled on a three at the end of regulation, makes all three free throws to send it into overtime. Then the Thunder pull away and win in OT in the fourth game of the series. So the Thunder win the season series from Golden State. But give us a Thunder Warriors playoff series. So entertaining. I mean, the games are mid-130s. It seems like every single time they play, it's the other night, 138, 136. It's been 138, 134, and then 141 to 139 or whatever it was. Just wildly entertaining games between these two teams. And a 7-game series between the two would be phenomenal if it comes up in April and May once we get into the NBA playoffs. That would be if basketball Santa is listening, that's what I want wrapped up underneath my tree, is Thunder's Warriors first round series with Oklahoma City getting four of those at home and being the home team advantage. Give us that basketball Santa. That would be awesome. That'll wrap it up for us here on a Monday. Still plenty to talk about. We'll dive into the NFL tomorrow. Look ahead. It's what's coming. Heisman. Jalen Daniels wins. No surprise there. Or Jaden Daniels, excuse me. Everyone have a wonderful Monday. We'll be back tomorrow. Skinny on Sports. Right here on the Sports Animal.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.